This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
In September, MethaneAction.org held a webinar on why we need to restore methane levels in the atmosphere. Former Earthbeat Radio host and Methane Action CEO Daphne Washam introduces Rob Jackson.
Rob is a professor in Stanford's Earth Systems Science Department. He is the Michelle and Kev Provostiel Professor and Senior Fellow at the Woods Institute for the Environment and at the Precourt Institute for Energy. Rob also chairs the Global Carbon Project, the premier academic institution tracking global greenhouse gas emissions. And with his free time, he serves on the board of Methane Action. So thanks for joining us, Rob.
Thank you, Daphne. And thank you all for your attention and for your interest in climate. I'll be talking about methane removal and mitigation. And I want to begin by saying that all of us involved in pursuing research in methane removal have spent our careers and our livelihoods really mitigating greenhouse gas emissions. I mean, my group, we map street leaks of methane and look at appliances and homes and oil and gas wells. So we all know that mitigation is the first order of business. But as Dave mentioned, we've run out of time to simply mitigate, we believe, and want to pursue research into methane removal. And that's the focus of the talk that I'll be giving today, why that's important and how we might do that. Just to put a little flesh on the bones of methane rising, not only is methane rising faster relatively than carbon dioxide is, but the pace of increase is also going up. The increases in the last 2 years of 16 and 17 parts per billion were the biggest in the past 40 years, and we don't completely understand why that is. Probably methane sources are increasing, but sinks may be slowing so that the lifetime of methane in the atmosphere expands too. And that's one of the themes that I'll cover today. We need to think about reducing those sources and mitigating methane emissions, but also adjusting the sinks too. So methane's going up, it's going up even faster than it has before. So why methane? You've heard quite a bit about this already. It's very potent. In the last decade, methane was responsible for two-thirds as much warming as carbon dioxide. There are a lot of numbers for different global warming potentials. Congresswoman Pingree used 25. Sir David correctly mentioned that instantaneously, it's more than 100. We had a paper out last year led by Sam Abernathy, a PhD student, and we believe that if the time frame of 1.5 degrees C is the goal that's important to you, then the valuation of methane should be at least 75. In other words, one ton of methane released causes 75 times the warming of carbon dioxide over the time frame between now and when we expect to reach 1.5 C increases, if that happens, heaven forbid. So it's very potent, and there are many good reasons to reduce it. For some justifications, it's the only lever at our disposal to reduce temperatures quickly, and by quickly, I mean over a few decades, to reduce peak temperature thresholds and to delay them as well. And our estimates are that each billion tons of methane that's either mitigated or removed from the atmosphere will lower mean global temperatures by 0.2 degrees C. And importantly, and beneficially, will also reduce surface ozone by one parts per billion because methane as a hydrocarbon is involved in ozone formation. One ppb ozone reduction would improve crop yields around the world and would also save 50,000 lives a year, independent of the benefits for climate. So there are a lot of good reasons, both temperature-wise, climate-wise, and health-wise, for us to act quickly to address methane emissions. We can reduce methane in the atmosphere by mitigating it. So all of the arrows that are upwards in this figure are sources of methane to the atmosphere. The biggest two that we're familiar with are energy, fossil energy use on the left, about 100 million tons a year, and agricultural activities, primarily cattle. The middle green arrow is the natural source of wetlands, the biggest in the world, of methane, which is the biggest natural source in the world. This is the arrow that we're worried about increasing with warming temperatures if, for instance, tropical wetland emissions go up or if the permafrost thaws. So not only do we have to worry about and be concerned about mitigating methane emissions from human activities, we have to consider scenarios where methane starts to be released from natural systems very quickly. But not only do we want to tackle sources, we want to tackle the downward arrows on the right. These are the sinks that are natural detergents for methane in the atmosphere, and also soil microbes. All of these arrows provide options or arrows in our quiver, if you will. Let me take just a second to say, what is methane removal? Well, methane removal oxidizes methane in the atmosphere to carbon dioxide. You see that in the reaction shown here. Methane plus oxygen goes to carbon dioxide and water vapor. Methane removal mimics what happens naturally from natural detergents in the air. And it's important to realize that every molecule of methane that goes to the atmosphere turns into carbon dioxide over time. So obviously, it would be better if we could turn methane into something that weren't a greenhouse gas. But by converting it to carbon dioxide, we are simply speeding the natural process. We can do this using catalysts or other methods I'll come to in a minute, and Renaud will discuss. Another important aspect to methane removal is there's no storage required as there is for carbon dioxide. We're not putting methane underground or anything like that. We're simply grabbing it in the atmosphere, oxidizing it, and releasing it again to speed up what nature does naturally. Some technologies that appear promising for methane removal: there are catalysts, both photocatalysts that use light, like titanium dioxide, metal catalysts embedded into high surface area frameworks like zeolites. There are aerosols processes that enhance the chlorine and OH radicals that scrub methane from the air naturally. So you can think of generating these aerosols and releasing them into the air potentially to oxidize methane. And then we can do things to increase the activity of microbes in the soils as well to speed up the natural sink that microbes provide. All of these things are in play and deserve research in our view. One last point I'd like to make is that research on methane removal will improve our ability to mitigate methane, because most methane emissions in the world are at relatively low concentrations. They're above 2 parts per million, where the background concentration is, but below 2,000 parts per million. And the important thing to realize here is there's a technology gap. We have no mitigation capabilities now when the concentration of methane falls below 2,000 ppm. So if we can foster research to oxidize or remove methane at these low concentrations, yes, we want to be able to do that in the atmosphere, but we want to start at concentrations above atmospheric too. Coal mine gas that might be at 2,000 ppm, dairy gas that might be in the hundreds of ppms. So in other words, start with sources, what you would effectively call mitigation, and work our way down to true atmospheric removal. So there's an opportunity to improve mitigation by fostering and promoting methane removal research. Finally, I just want to leave you on a philosophical note. The UN just began its decade on ecosystem restoration. And what is ecosystem restoration? Well, it's the process of assisting the recovery of an ecosystem that's been degraded, damaged, or destroyed. We have degraded, damaged, and destroyed aspects of the atmosphere, and I believe that restoration should be our goal for the atmosphere. And the only gas that anyone on this webinar could live to see restored to pre-industrial concentrations in their lifetime is methane, because of the combination of its short lifetime in the atmosphere of only a decade or so, and the fact that active and aggressive mitigation and removal could see it drop back to pre-industrial levels of, say, 700 parts per billion. That will be very difficult, and no one on this call believes it will be easy, but we want research to pursue that as a goal. And I think restoration is a wonderful framework to view healing of the atmosphere.
Daphne Weisham.
PB Barnard says, I'd love to hear the speaker's views on our chances of success in methane removal and climate restoration or repair more broadly if humanity does not also embark on an ambitious program of degrowing our global economy. Most of us know how our numbers and appetites are undermining all of our best efforts to solve our planetary and societal crisis.
Dirk Zelka, author and president of the Institute for Governments and Sustainable Development in Washington, D.C.
Okay, well, that's the kind of question that we need to go have a drink to answer. Let me give you a couple of thoughts on it. I mean, I think this is a profound question. Can we solve climate change in time in the current, you know, capitalistic system that we now have? Or do we need a broader revolution of ideas? I think about that, but I don't work on that. I work on what we can do today. And it's a tremendous amount on the CO2 energy side. As everyone knows, we're doing remarkably well there. Now, the non-CO2 side, leading with methane, is the next piece. And we've moved that issue way up on the agenda for policymakers. Now, we need to get the money for the research and the deployment. We need to follow the other advice from Sir David King on other restoration projects. I mean, there are other things to do with the Arctic sea ice, for example. I think we can do most of what we have to do in the current system. But I think about this broader question all the time. Do we really need a bigger revolution, which would have to be led by the young people? I mean, they say, you know, paradigms, the old paradigms never die out, but the people who hold those paradigms do. And so there may come a moment when the young people do get to take over and we have a more just and equitable society where we don't have to fight as hard to keep the planet safe.
Rob Jackson.
We had a paper out a couple months ago just looking at relationships between human well-being and energy use. And the conclusion of that paper is that high energy consuming countries like here in the United States that consume two or three times the global average get very little for the extra energy that we use when you look at things like life expectancy, infant mortality, pollution, and sort of quality and length of life. We don't get a lot. And I think we have to have a discussion about demand side management. Reducing consumption of goods and changing diets is just as important as mitigating emissions. We can't just build our way out of the climate problem.
That was a selection from the online conference, Methane Removal on the Critical Path to Reducing Peak Global Temperatures, as presented by methaneaction.org. Search that title on YouTube or find the link in my show blog at ecoshock.org.
Radio EcoShock.